The Astros beat the Cardinals 10-7 after a limp defensive performance by both franchises. Plenty of cheap hits, plenty of errors. A bad way to win, and a worse way to lose. Reacher had stopped paying attention halfway through. He had started thinking about Eileen Hutton instead. She was part of his mosaic. He had seen her once in the States before the Gulf, just briefly across a crowded courtroom, just long enough to register her head-turning quality, and he had assumed he would never see her again, which he figured was a pity. But then she had showed up in Saudi as part of the long, ponderous Desert Shield build-up. Reacher had been there pretty much from the start, as a recently demoted captain. The first stage of any clean-sheet foreign deployment always resembled gang warfare between the MPs and the troops they were sent out with. But after 6 weeks or so, the situation usually settled down some, and Desert Shield wasn't any different. After 6 weeks, there was a structure in place, and in terms of military law enforcement, a structure demanded in-country personnel all the way up from jailers to judges, and Hutton had shown up as one of the prosecutors they shipped in. Reacher had assumed it was volunteer duty for her, which he was happy about, because that made it likely she was unmarried. She was unmarried. First time their paths crossed, he checked her left hand and saw no ring. Then he checked her collar and saw a major's oak leaves. That would make it a challenge, he figured, for a recently demoted captain. Then he checked her eyes and saw that the challenge would be worth it. Her eyes were blue and full of intelligence and mischief and promise, he figured, and adventure. He had just turned 31 years old, and he was up for anything. The desert heat helped. Most of the time, the temperature was above 120 degrees, and apart from regular gas attack practices, standard on-post dress devolved down to shorts and sleeveless undershirts. And in Reacher's experience, the close proximity of hot and nearly naked men and women always led somewhere good. Better than serving out November in Minnesota. That was for damn sure. The initial approach had promised to be tricky, given the disparity in rank, and when it came to it, he fumbled it slightly, and was saved only because she was just as up for it as he was, and wasn't afraid to let it show. After that, it had been as smooth as silk, 3 long months. Good times. Then new orders had come through, like they always did, eventually. He hadn't even said goodbye to her. Didn't get the chance. Never saw her again, either. I'll see her again tomorrow, he thought. He stayed in the bar until ESPN started recycling the highlights it had already shown once. Then he settled up his tab and stepped out to the sidewalk, into the yellow glare of the streetlights. He decided he wouldn't go back to the Metropole Palace. He decided it was time for a change. No real reason, just his normal, restless instinct. Keep moving. Never stay in one place too long. And the Metropole was a gloomy old pile, unpleasant even by his undemanding standards. He decided to try the motor court instead, the one he had seen on his way to the auto parts store, the one next to the barber shop. Any style, $7. Maybe he could get a haircut before Hutton blew into town. Chenko left the Zex house at midnight. He took Vladimir with him. If the redhead was to be beaten to death, then Vladimir would have to do it. It had to look right, forensically. Chenko was too small to inflict the kind of battering that an enraged 6'5", 250-pound ex-soldier might be provoked to. But Vladimir was a different matter. Vladimir might well be able to do the job with a single blow, which might be convincing on the post-mortem slab. A refusal, an objection, a sexual taunt. A big man might lash out once in frustration, a little harder than he intended. They were both familiar with the girl. They had met her before because of her connection to Jeb Oliver. They had even all worked together once. They knew where she lived, which was in a rented garden apartment that nestled on a barren patch of land in the shadow of the state highway, where it first rose on its stilts, south and west of downtown. And they knew that she lived there alone. Reacher walked a long, aimless, three-block circle before approaching the motor court. He kept his own footsteps light and listened hard for the gritty crunch of a shadow behind him. He heard nothing. saw nothing. He was alone. The motor court was practically an antique. At one time, it must have been the latest thing, and consequently, fairly upmarket. But since then, the relentless march of time and fashion had left it behind. It was well maintained, but not updated. It was exactly the kind of place he liked. He roused the clerk and paid cash for one night only. He used the name Don Hefner, who had played second base and hit .261 during the Yankees' lean year of 1934. The clerk gave him a big brass key and pointed him down the road to room number 8. The room was faded and a little damp. The counterpane on the bed and the drapes at the window looked original. So did the bathroom. But everything worked, and the door locked tight. He took a short shower and folded his pants and his shirt very carefully and put them flat under the mattress. That was as close as he ever got to ironing. They would look okay in the morning. He would shave and shower very carefully and go to the barber shop after breakfast. He didn't want to devalue whatever memories Hutton might have retained, assuming she had retained any at all. Chenko parked east of the highway, and he and Vladimir walked under it and approached the girl's apartment building from the back, unseen. They kept close to the wall and walked around to her door. Chenko told Vladimir to keep out of sight. Then he knocked gently. There was no response, which wasn't entirely unexpected. It was late, and she was probably already in bed. So Chenko knocked again, a little louder. And again, as loud as he dared. He saw a light come on in a window, heard the quiet shuffle of feet inside, heard her voice through the crack where the door met the jamb.
Who's there?
It's me.
What do you want?
We need to talk.
I was asleep.
I'm sorry?
It's awful late.
I know, but it's very urgent. There was a pause.
Wait a minute.
Chenko heard her shuffle back toward her bedroom, then silence. Then she came back. The door opened. She was standing there, clutching a blue robe around her.
What?
You need to come with us, Chenko said. Vladimir stepped out of the shadow.
Why is he here?
He's helping me tonight.
What do you want?
You need to go out.
Like this? I can't.
I agree. You need to get dressed. Like for a date.
A date?
You need to look really good.
But I'll have to shower, do my hair. We have time.
A date with who? You just have to be seen, like you were ready for a date.
At this time of night? The whole town is asleep.
Not the whole town. We're awake, for instance.
How much do I get?
200, because it's so late.
How long will it take?
Just a minute. You just have to be seen walking somewhere.
I don't know.
200 for a minute's work isn't bad.
It isn't a minute's work. It'll take me an hour to get ready.
250, then.
Okay,
Sandy said. Chenko and Vladimir waited in her living room, listening through the thin walls, hearing the shower running, hearing the hairdryer, the held breaths as she put on her makeup, the elastic snap of undergarments, the whisper of fabric on skin. Chenko saw that Vladimir was restless and sweating. Not because of the task ahead, but because there was a woman in a state of undress in a nearby room. Vladimir was unreliable in certain situations. Chenko was glad he was there to supervise. If he hadn't been, the plan would have derailed for sure. Sandy walked into the living room after an hour, looking, as the Americans would say, like $1 million. She was wearing a filmy black blouse that was nearly transparent. Underneath it was a black bra that molded her breasts into twin mounds of implausible roundness. She had on tight black pants that ended just below the knee. Pedal pushers? Capri pants? Chenko wasn't sure of the name. She was wearing black, high-heeled shoes. With her pale skin and her red hair and her green eyes, she looked like a picture in a magazine.
Pity,
Chenko thought.
My money?
Afterward, Chenko said, when we bring you back.
Let me see it.
It's in the car.
So let's go look at it.
They walked in single file. Chenko led the way. Sandy came next. Vladimir brought up the rear. They walked under the highway. The car was right there ahead of them. It was cold and misted over. There was no money in it. None at all. Chenko knew that. So he stopped 6 feet short and turned around, nodded to Vladimir. "Now," he said. Vladimir reached forward with his right hand and put it on Sandy's right shoulder from behind. He used it to turn her upper body sideways, and then he crashed his left fist into her right temple, a little above and in front of her ear. It was a colossal blow, explosive. Her head snapped violently sideways and around, and her legs gave way and she fell to the ground vertically like an empty suit of clothes slipping off a hanger. Chenko squatted down next to her, waited a moment for the body to settle, and then felt the neck for a pulse. There wasn't one.
"You broke her neck?"
Vladimir nodded. "It's about placement. The main lector is mostly sideways, obviously, but you try for a little rotation, too. So it's not so much a break, it's more like a wrenching action, like a hangman's noose.
Is your hand okay?"
"It will be tender tomorrow."
"Good work."
"I try my best." They unlocked the car and raised the rear armrest and laid the body across the back seat. There was just enough space, side to side. She had been a small girl, not tall. Then they got in the front together and drove off. They looped well to the east and came up on the Metropole Palace from behind. They avoided the bay where the garbage was piled and found a side alley. They stopped outside a fire exit. Vladimir slid out and opened the rear door, pulled the body out by the shoulders, and left it where it fell. Then he got back in. Chenko drove on and paused after 5 yards and turned in his seat. The body was lying in a heap against the alley's far wall, directly opposite the fire door. It looked like a plausible scenario. She had fled the soldier's room in shame and panic, chosen not to wait for the elevator, and run down the fire stairs and out into the night. Maybe she had stumbled at that point and aggravated an injury already done to her. Maybe she had tripped and fallen against the wall and the shock had dislodged an already wrenched vertebra. Chenko turned back and faced front and drove on, not fast, not slow, not drawing attention, not standing out, 8 miles north and west, all the way back to the Zex house.